This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
We were just talking about this, and Chelsea's been on vacation for some time, so she kind of missed this story. On June 24th, in the city of Surfside, Florida, a 13-story condo, one arm of the entire condo collapsed in the span of a couple minutes.
Cool.
Now, as of the recording of this, 36 people have been confirmed dead. About 140 people are still missing. They're very reluctant to declare anybody else dead, but they've been in rubble for over 12 days. So this is just, it's not the video of it. They do actually have video of the collapse.
Who was videoing the collapse of a building?
I couldn't tell you that.
Would you get so lucky? Whoa.
Yeah, an entire portion of the building.
Someone actually video record collapse?
Yeah, the collapse is that you can find the collapse. I'm just having trouble finding that video right now, despite the fact that it was
everywhere. How would they have known to record that?
My guess is it's security footage.
Oh, as they release that.
As of Sunday, July 4th, they had collapsed the remainder of the building so that they would be able to get into other areas and search. And also because Florida was about to get hit by a... This is the rest of it. This isn't the controlled part.
Oh, okay. It's like, this doesn't seem like...
And yeah, this is a fairly significantly sized building. Like, just in one wing of it, there are over 150 people that are either missing or dead. It's a fairly big tragedy, and nobody really knows at this point what happened. They were set to have repairs worked on in the coming year, because Florida has a law that you need to inspect buildings after 40 years of standing, and this building was built in 1981, so this was the 40th year, and they were set to have repairs. A report was made a couple years ago that said there was significant damage to concrete that it was made out of, as well as the rebar within. However, nobody specifically knows at this point what happened in this collapse. There are a lot of speculations, and we're just going to wait and see, because it's very interesting.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, there's a lot of worry that there's a lot of construction around that time that's just failing. And the entire, not just the U.S., North America has a dating infrastructure. And this is just one part of infrastructure is where you live.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I found very interesting is last year, strata insurance, at least what we call condos in BC, stratas, insurance to insure the entire building that you would get with the condo board, everybody pays through their fees, went up 50% in 1 year because actuary calculations seem to be preparing for something. I'd be curious to see if the same thing was going on in Florida and if they're preparing for more collapses or at least major repairs that need to be done.
There was just a big thing, and I shouldn't really be talking about it right now because I can't remember what it was, where... They weren't insuring certain type. Was that it? They weren't insuring certain types of buildings.
They weren't insuring some stratas too.
At first, I can't remember why, but there is a huge controversy about it that they just couldn't have insurance.
Yeah, that's and if you could get insurance, they upped your premium by 50% in 1 year, which for an entire strata building is a significant amount. But we'll see what happens with this in the coming weeks and months, because there's going to be some interesting info, at least about this one particular building and what happened, as well as if there are other structures that are built around the same shoddy workmanship.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. That's awful, though.
Yeah. And with that, let's get into something that's a little more fringe. Cue the intro music. From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe. Welcome to Journey to the Fringe. We Hello. Are going in a bit of a different direction today and talking about a genre that we really haven't touched on too much up until this point. And that is, I want to say paranormal, but it's not paranormal. It's the ghosts and
I mean, it
spirits.
Kind of is. I don't know what
But also, it's a different sect of the paranormal.
Yeah. And I guess we'll quantify it at the end, maybe, if we remember that at the end of this episode.
Yeah. And this, I've been very upfront with Chelsea about this. This is something that has just never piqued my interest too much. But at the same time, it is a fringe topic. It is something that a lot of people like. So I think it is, to you, the fans, in our best interest to do some research on it and to tell you a little bit about it. On Chelsea, at least.
So, yeah. So on this episode, I'm doing the Warrens. So Ed and Lorraine Warren. And Taylor, if I were to ask you about Ed and Lorraine Warren, do you have a reference for them, if anything, that you would know them from or anything at all?
Amityville Horror.
Yeah. That's it?
I think they're involved in The Exorcist too, but I can't remember. Not the sequel to The Exorcist. The Exorcist as well. But I can't remember that one for sure. Also, I know they are shrouded in controversy.
Yeah. So I'm going to touch on that a little bit. I knew they were shrouded in controversy a little bit before I even looked into this, but I actually didn't know what and why or how up until looking into this. I know that my first knowledge was actually Lorraine Warren on watching TV shows. Like, I really liked Paranormal State for some reason. I like those stupid paranormal shows. And Scariest Places on Earth, she was on it, and she appears on a lot of those shows as a psychic, I guess.
Not an expert?
So
I really feel like she would be an expert you would bring on.
I mean, let's get to the end of this and see what we think about her being an expert. But no, she was brought on a lot of TV shows as like a paranormal, like medium. So let's get more specific. So they're paranormal investigators and authors. And Edward Warren Miney lived 5th of December 1926 to the 23rd of August 2006. So he's been passed away for a little bit now. And he was a self-taught and professed demonologist. So no PhDs here. He also gave lectures on the topic of demonology with no apparent background other than being a Catholic. And Lorraine worked alongside Ed and was a clairvoyant medium. That's the word I was looking for. And Lorraine Rita Warren lived the 31st of January 1927 till April 18th, 2019. So she just passed away recently within the last, I guess that's 3 years. So both are from Bridgeport, Connecticut, where Ed lived in a haunted house where his lifelong fascination with the paranormal started. And the two met in 1944 at a theater in Bridgeport, where Lorraine would often go with her mother, and Ed worked there, and he sees her and makes contact with her, and they begin dating then.
I do like your use of the term makes contact for them starting to date.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. I am also sad because it really does seem like this is an industry you got to be born into, or at least into a haunted house. So we're kind of out of this one.
It's really strange. It's really strange how this like takes a turn. And I don't know how you would get into this nowadays. It's just like, I wasn't expecting how this comes along. Shortly after they begin dating, Ed enlists into the Navy. And a year later, he's deployed for a short 4 months before his ship is sunk in the North Atlantic. And then he returns home for 30 days on survivor's leave to get married in 1945. Ed then concludes his service, serving in World War II, and they have a daughter named Judy in 1951.
Now, are their kids still alive?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know that I actually make mention of what she's doing now, but maybe remind me. I'll try and remember. Okay. So I wasn't expecting this one. So later this year in 1951, which is a big year, Ed then goes to art school in Yale's art subsidiary called the Perry Art School. He withdraws after 2 years and the family hits the road setting up pop-up stands around the area where they're from in Connecticut. they start to sell Ed's paintings, which are mostly of haunted houses. Wasn't expecting that he went to art school. It was kind of a strange turn.
To
so
paint
he's an
haunted
artist.
Houses. Yeah. That's kind of a niche. I don't know if you necessarily
it's a
get
very
that
big
kind
niche.
Of education in art school.
Yeah, I actually don't know. Maybe that's why he dropped out.
I've learned all I can about my niche.
Yeah, they didn't. I don't know. And so I don't actually know what these paintings would look like. And yeah.
No,
I actually didn't
picture that
at
necessarily
all to see
either.
If I could find them. Yeah.
He's ahead of what schooling they could give you, kind of like how Bill Gates dropped out of university because he couldn't take like computer sciences. Like he got everything he could out of it.
And that was it. I've come as far. School's going to teach me about haunted houses. So now I have to self-teach. If you Google it quick, there's actually some on the internet you can look
interesting.
At. Yeah. From here, again, for some reason, the couple would research houses that they believed to be or heard were haunted. And Ed would stand outside of the house and paint slash draw the house, depending on what medium he had readily available, I guess, which is how their investigation career began. He would use this as, so he would sit outside the house and draw it. And then he and Lorraine would go to the house to use this as a way to get into the house. They'd be like, hey, here's this painting I did of your house, and get into the house to start investigating it. That really
were they
lot
invited into the house, or was
with?
He like distracting the owner so that Lorraine could sneak in the back?
No, they, I did make it sound like that though. I could see how you did that. No, they would essentially, like vampires, be like invited in.
Okay.
By
so we really can't
this,
confirm or deny whether or not the Warrens were vampires, because they were always invited in.
Yeah, they were being invited in. The two start getting a name for themselves by doing this, and they start becoming well known in the paranormal community, and they do eventually start giving lectures at high schools. By doing these lectures, people would start contacting them and sharing their stories, which then they wouldn't have to be doing, I guess, as much research on what's haunted and what's not haunted, and then itching to get into the houses.
Oh man. So his painting career kind of dwindled once they became well known. No longer had to use it to get inside.
I don't know though. Wouldn't assume so. This kind of went off in a different direction. Both are devout Catholics, and Ed eventually was recognized as the only Catholic lay expert in demonology. And you can definitely tell this in all their investigations, which I'll kind of get to in a little bit here. Literally, everything is a demon to them. Nothing else. It's just all demons. And Ed does say that they do exist for the sheer purpose of opposing God. So there's a lot of Catholicism in everything that they, literally everything that they do. And they also attest that demons possess those that lack faith. Coming from the New England Society for Psychic Research, it says, for the past 50 years, religious authorities have consistently turned to Ed and Lorraine to control some of the most profane outbreaks of diabolical phenomena in the country, which I don't know why they go to him or anything. I mean, he is self-professed.
They just did. Okay. Now, this might be further than you could look. When he says that he believes that possessions are because of a lack of faith, does he ever say a faith in what?
God.
Like God? Okay. So
it's very, everything that they say directly is linked with Catholic Church and a belief in God.
Okay. So it is very much so just a Western look at things, because that would not explain why somebody in India wouldn't get possessed per se. Or at least why they have different experiences.
I want to comment on this, but I can only...
It's outside.
Yeah, it's outside of this. And I can only kind of give my thought on this after reading about them. But I just have my thoughts that they would fit it into this small little box that they have on their outlook of what this is. Because literally everything is a demon.
Yeah, you would think that if you're in a country with a lower rate of Christianity, then you would immediately have, a lower rate of Abrahamic faiths, let's say, because those all believe in the same God, more or less. So they have a faith in one part of the God. But in a place like India or China or Japan, they would have much lower rates of faith. So you think that you would see a correlation in higher possession rates. But I guess nobody's there they're looking for it, or they'd probably name it something different in their mind.
Yeah, Ed and Lorraine probably wouldn't. You'll see kind of by the end of this that they just fit everything just as specifically what I just said, that demons possess those that lack in faith.
It's all religious.
It's very small-minded what they do. And I know
maybe that's why I've never been drawn to this, just because there seems to be an inherent faith requirement with a lot of this sect of the paranormal. Whereas like alien and Bigfoot sightings very rarely have any interaction with churches.
Well, I mean, you find it with religion, and I've always asked that with myself, that it just, how do I put it? Especially when you're dealing with demons. I don't know. I guess when you look at things, demons are something that by definition, by the church, I guess, I've never heard one. Have you heard of demon in another? I guess there's jinn, but I don't know that jinn specifically fits into demon.
When I was talking about Aleister Crowley, he used the term, and remember, he liked his different terms, so he used the term daemons with an A. And daemons were just kind of all higher beings overall in Greek, because it was more so just like, it was exactly like the jinn. It's just a different being than ourselves that is at least on our footing or higher, because they can all be or bad.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on who's defining this and looking at this, because it's not something that scientifically exists. So it depends
and that's
on who's looking at it.
That's an entire thing that philosophy's been grasping for since the dawn of it, is like, what is good and what is bad?
Yeah.
It's all very subjective. Especially
when it's something that you can't see.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting topic. And these ones I find are very small-minded, especially where we live in North America. We're going to see it probably defined the most as something going against God, I guess, because that's a predominant religion. I don't know.
That's okay. So we can keep going.
So then, a couple found the New England Society for Psychic Research in 1952, and it is the oldest ghost hunting group in New England. And the society uses a variety of individuals for their investigations, including medical doctors, researchers, police officers, nurses, members of clergy, etc. They use people from all different sorts of walks to investigate this. And you were asking about their daughter. She actually is, I think she heads this society now.
Okay. Got to be born into it.
If not with a partner. So she's still involved in, exactly. There's no other way to get into it, I think, at this point. Unless, should we try sketching houses and trying to get into them? You distract them and I'll get a go in the back.
Oh, man. If we hadn't just talked about it on stream, we would have had the perfect crime.
How many people are watching this right now?
Just one. New episode idea.
So there are some fairly notable cases that the Warrens have investigated. If you're not watching this live on Twitch, I just put quotations with my fingers around investigated, claiming to have investigated over 10,000 cases. One of the most notable, depending on who you're talking to, I guess, which one is Taylor, is the Amityville haunting, which really started it all for the duel in terms of like movies and franchises and such, which they really profited. So then after they opened this, they opened the Warrens Occult Museum. Have you heard of that?
I have, and I believe it's because it has some haunted dolls in it.
Yeah, they opened this in 1952, and it did close in 2019. So that's when Lorraine passed away. And it housed books and other relics collected at the sites of investigations that they were apparently attached to some sort of demonic presence. Notice how I say demonic presence. That's specifically how they say these items that were in this museum, that they had a demonic presence attached to them.
Quick question. What happened to everything in the museum once it closed?
I don't know. The museum used to have a website, and I saw it referred to back. I read a lot of old articles on the museum, and it referred back to a website that's no longer there. I read a lot of articles about what was in there sourcing the website, and it's not there anymore. So I have no idea what happened to those. Maybe the daughter inherited them or something.
I feel like we missed an opportunity for like the ultimate foreclosure sale.
I don't know.
Also, yeah, I don't know if you actually want that. No,
I want to keep this as hard as it is, like as impartial as I can. So you can Google the reviews on the Occult Museum. I'm not going to really get in one way or another of what was in there and people's thoughts on what was in there, but that's the official like sighting of what was kept in that museum from the Warrens.
That like most haunted doll in the world was there, was it not?
I wouldn't say it's the most haunted doll in the world. And that's my next kind of segue here is going to be about that, what you're referring to. I think the most haunted doll is Robert. I think he's in Florida.
That's right. That's right.
Which I find Robert to be much more creepy than this doll. Now, that's a little bit of history of Ed and Lorraine Warren. I know you're probably thinking, what are the famous cases that the Warrens have done? So these are probably some ones that you've heard about. I know you said you didn't know much about the Warrens, but I thought I'd give you some of their better known cases out there. So the first one is Annabelle, which is the one that you were just citing that was in their museum.
Yeah.
And she is on, I think she has her own like pair or two or three of movies in the Conjuring franchise. I think I don't know if I've seen them. So good old Annabelle. So Annabelle is a Raggedy Ann doll. So if you've seen any of these Conjuring movies, she does not look like that. She's a Raggedy Ann doll. And honestly, I thought there would be more to the story that I'm about to share with you about Annabelle. And keep in mind, most of the story, if not all, is given solely by the Warrens.
Not even the owner?
To let you know. Yeah, they're going to find that a lot.
You think usually somebody would have reported it haunted, so they would then go investigate it.
The only thing that I could find on this at all was literally given by Ed Warren.
Okay.
So I'm going to continue on with this, and then I'll continue on with your other stories, and you can do with this knowledge what you might. If you've seen, I think it's The Conjuring or The Conjuring 2. It's not the actual Annabelle. It's the first. Have you seen The Conjuring movies?
I have not, no.
Really? I really like the first one. Anyhow, there's one where it's at the beginning, I think, and they do a short little clip on Annabelle. It's not anything really to do with the movie, but they actually do a really good job on this kind of story. So in 1968, a nursing student is giving a doll by her mother, and the girl brings it home to where she lives with her roommate, and the doll begins to act strangely. So things the doll does includes they invited a friend over to sleep for the night, and he wakes up and the doll is at his feet staring at him and he can't move, which sounds like classic sleep paralysis, and maybe he has a fear of dolls or something like that. The doll would also switch positions, a leg would cross, or it would be found on its side, or it would be found in another room. And it's also reported that they would find parchment paper notes with things like "help me" written on them when they didn't have parchment paper. They turn to a psychic for answers who says that it's the spirit of a young girl named Annabelle Higgins. This is just some psychic off the street, possibly selling her artwork of haunted houses. And that's just who showed up first at the house to investigate.
Classic con.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not something you really get with the door-to-door salesman anymore with COVID. Somehow the Warrens hear about this. The Warrens really have their ears open for all things ghosts. They contact the girls. Might have been a painting and went in there. So they say this is a demon manipulating the doll and it's looking for a human host. And they take the doll after saying it's a demon and they lock it up in their occult museum behind glass to encase the evil spirit. That's about as much as I could get on this story. Again, all relayed by Ed Warren. And on the drive home, the story goes that they had to stop to sprinkle holy water on Annabelle because she was making shit crazy. And that's just my quote, not Ed's quote directly. I had to like pizzazz it up a bit. And there's actually no account that I could find of what happened here. So either something happened or nothing happened, but the holy water was required or probably not required because like literally none of this is corroborated by anyone. They just have a doll behind glass. Oh. Ed also told the story of a couple who visited the museum. They made fun of Annabelle while they're there. And on the way home on their motorcycle, they're like laughing about how stupid Annabelle was. And they get in a motorcycle accident, leaving the occult museum. And I think one died. But again, no account of this ever happening.
Also, can I just share something really quick?
Hmm.
This was the encasement it was in.
Yeah, quite unsettling.
Yeah. Also, that's you're a looking at pure containment evil. Box. A demon containment box. But you also, it locked. Doesn't contain the bad luck of the demon. Just like everything else.
Now, is that a tarot card on it?
Yeah, it looks like there's two tarot cards on there. And it says at the very top, danger, do not touch anything. Have you ever seen those like community libraries where somebody will set up like it's like a larger birdhouse with a glass door?
Oh, it does look like that.
It looks like a community library. And there is a Raggedy Ann doll stuffed in the middle with its smiling face. On the door handle,
it's almost not big enough.
There is a tarot card. And on the bottom of the glass, it says warning with the ing underlined. And then it says positively do not.
Not
which
what?
I don't think the next word would be touch, because above it says danger, do not touch anything. So why would they give you a more specific danger about touching?
I think they're just reinforcing do not touch anything. Do not.
Danger, warning, positively do not.
Yeah.
Okay, so you think that, okay. Don't do the bad thing.
I don't know. That's just me being an English language speaker interpreting that. But my question was, looking at that, do you think it actually locks or do you think it's just a magnet holding it shut?
I don't even think there's a magnet. I would at least like to see one of those like latch hooks that like keeps the libraries closed. But no, not even that. Also, did he ever confirm why he didn't like just burn it?
You bring up a very good point, actually, and it's one that I didn't think of, and it's obviously because they needed to charge admission for people to see this in their museum.
Okay. They just had this bird feeder that was sitting blank.
I don't know. I don't want to bias this, but I mean, with that information, they could have just destroyed that if it was that big of a threat to them.
Yeah.
Demonologists. Instead, they charged admission to see it.
And at least potentially put people at risk, possibly two motorcyclists, but we can't confirm that.
Funny thing is, he tells that as a part of the Annabelle story, yet there's no liability on him for not destroying that doll.
Yeah, there's an old case in, I forget most of the info, but basically if you're selling a house, you don't actually have to disclose if it's haunted. Somebody bought a haunted house and it came out later on that like they kept hearing creaks and whatnot, and they sued the original owner for not disclosing that it was haunted when they're like, is there anything we should know about the house? And the courts decided that that's not actually something you have to disclose when you're selling a house.
It's only certain states, though, because I think there's certain states where you have to.
That was in Canada.
So that's all of Canada?
I could not tell you what the state's rules are. Yes, in Canada, you do not have to
listen to enough that I'm pretty sure it varies by state.
Do not take this as legal fact. This is just a fun anecdote. And if you are selling a haunted house, do not just rely on Journey to the Fringe for your due diligence.
Yeah.
Please.
Hashtag don't use us for legal things.
Legal stuff. Yeah. We're not a legal stuff podcast.
DMS will give you the name of somebody. Off the record. No, someone that's going to get so much business. Okay, so that's Annabelle. So it's getting interesting. Did you say?
They really needed to finish off their display with something, that is for sure.
I think Annabelle was the occult museum's like...
draw.
I don't know. Okay. What's draw? Is that the thing?
Yeah,
star it's their on draw. The Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I got right now. Okay. So the next one is the Perrin family. So this one is the original Conjuring. I really like this one. And I do actually own the book written by Andrea Perrin, who was one of the children that were in the house. So it's a family of five, and Andrea is one of the children. I haven't actually read this because I've been really scared to read it. It's actually a pretty intense haunting. I've only read a couple of chapters. I do kind of want to go back and read it now that I've kind of done a little bit of research on this one. This one is corroborated a little bit by somebody. Like I said, this was a case on the original Conjuring movie, which is really good, like I said. Taking place in Harrisville, Rhode Island, when the Perrin family moves into a farmhouse in 1970 that is allegedly haunted by many different entities. family of five lives there for 10 years. And if you've ever seen the movie, Andrea Perrin does say that the movie is not based on her book. They're the stories Lorraine and Andrea shared with the movie studio. So they took them and kind of put them together and did with it what they would. And Perrin says that the movie doesn't use any one singular scene that she had conveyed to them. Rather, it combines bits and pieces, and some were straight up made up, as you would suspect with a movie that's based on a true story. Now, one thing that happens in the movie, if you've seen it, spoiler alert, is an exorcism, which never actually happened. Rather, a séance did take place in which the Warrens brought in a medium, which conjured up a spirit that attacked Carolyn Perrin. So Carolyn's the mother, and threw her into the other room. And Andrea Perrin has said that this was the most terrifying night of her life. So the movie just kind of ran with it. It was really good. There's a lot of jumpy parts. It's a really good, scary movie. This particular encounter...
And this is a party other than Ed and Lorraine saying this info. Like, somebody else is actually confirming this happened outside of Ed. Okay.
So this one does, yes. Andrea Perrin has written, I think, a few books on this and speaks openly about it. There are people in her family that will not speak about anything in regards to this haunting. And she does have a few books. So yeah, this one is, I wouldn't say necessarily corroborating. She has a book and she has her own view on it. I think Lorraine kind of has another thing in regards to it. So with the seance that took place, this particular encounter took a long time for Carolyn to come out of the condition that she was in. And Andrea speculates that it's most likely because she had a concussion and was drained after the experience with the seance. So she very well could have been possessed. I mean, this also resulted in a dark presence being attached to Carolyn. The dark presence attached to Carolyn was thought to be that of someone named Bathsheba Sherman, who lived around the home in the early 1800s. Rain was convinced that the demonic presence in the house that was the dark entity attached to Carolyn was that of Bathsheba, after Carolyn had relayed a story to Ed and Lorraine that she was laying on the couch one day and out of nowhere she had felt a pain in her calf and the muscle began to spasm. Carolyn noticed a wound with blood and notices a perfectly concentric circle where this wound is, and Lorraine is convinced that Bathsheba took a knitting needle to the grave to use it to stab Carolyn. And from there on out, Bathsheba was the demonic presence in the Perrin house.
So wait, she lived a long time ago, like over 100 years before this event, knew she was going to die and said, I'm going to hide this so that nobody can find it when I die. And it will be buried with me to stab people with. One in particular who lives on the farm over in about 150 years.
Yeah. So the thing with Bathsheba, and I set this up wrong, so I'm going to do my best to fix what I've done. Bathsheba was said to be a witch. And the reason that she was said to be a witch was because she had an infant die in her care and she was charged with manslaughter. So obviously in the 1800s, the rumors are going to go crazy once that happens. This is where she got the idea behind her that she was a witch, because people are going to speculate, especially at that time, if an infant dies in your care, right? So that she was a witch. Another rumor included that she sacrificed the infant for a satanic sacrifice. There's no ties to Bathsheba being a witch. It's only local legend. So she's charged with manslaughter. However, due to insufficient evidence, the charges were dropped by the court and she was found innocent. She was found innocent. However, the charges were just dropped. It never actually found her innocent. So just with all of the speculation of her, I mean, local legend goes that she was a witch.
Okay. Because
of an accusation. Yeah. So there is, and this again is a rumor, but when the baby was examined, it was determined that the wound that caused the infant's death was caused by a large sewing needle that had been impaled at the base of the child's skull. However, again, charges were dropped. That's only legend, especially with the witch and everything.
Is there anybody else outside of Lorraine that says this legend?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is local legend because this is something that was, it's the 1800s. So they still have newspaper and stuff like that. So you can go back in. They were using like censuses to do their research. Is that the proper plural for a census? They were doing their research. Lorraine is known for going back through records and researching things quite a bit. Lorraine took this and ran with it. So like I said, Bathsheba didn't even live at the property that they lived on, but she did the research of the area. She found an evil present. She saw this knitting needle with the child's skull, and that's where Bathsheba comes from, is Lorraine. So the weird thing about, like, and you're probably thinking about this right now, you see Annabelle, you see the parents, and then you're looking at the Warrens and like, what the hell? Warrens? Like, they're just, they take these stories and they just like do the research, they link something a little bit, and then they just like run with it. That's kind of the Warren's influence on The Conjuring and the Perrin case. However, I did want to mention with the Andrea Perrin's book, House of Darkness, House of Light, I thought that I would go through a couple of their actual haunting experiences there, coming from the Perrins, not from the Warrens at all. So why the Warrens grasp on to Bathsheba, I have no idea, because the actual house itself has a pretty dark history. It was host to 8 generations of one extended family that inhabited the house prior to the parents' arrival. That's a lot, 8 generations. It was also the site of 2 suicides by hanging, 1 suicide by poison, the rape and murder of an 11-year-old girl, 2 drownings, and the passing of 4 men who froze to death, in addition to other tragic losses of life. So there was quite a lot of death at this property. Andrea says that she had always considered the house a portal to the past and the future. There were many different spirits that were said to materialize. Some would only make their presence known when company was around by making loud noises. So this was only in the presence of when people came over. So another weird one is that a dog, a child, and a man would appear at the top of their staircase and stare at a wall. Like they were looking out a window, never looking or making eye contact with any of the residents of the home. If they're around or anything, they showed up quite a bit. Youngest of the siblings made a friend with Oliver Richardson, who lived in her closet, and she kept her friend a secret from the Warrens, and she was friends with Oliver, so she didn't want him to disappear, which is why she didn't tell the Warrens about him, or else they would have made up some crazy story about Oliver. Andrea Perrin reported a spirit who was the spitting image of herself as an old woman dressed in 17th century attire, and Carolyn, who was the mom, spotted 2 men seated in the dining room. Once the men had noticed Carolyn's presence, one man sitting at the table got the other man's attention and pointed at her watching them. So they're really kind of crazy ghost stories, which I was reading those and I was like, oh, I should read that book. I was just a little bit scared after watching The Conjuring, but it's a horror movie. So of course it's going to be scary. But you know, imagination when you're reading a scary story, sometimes they're really bad. Another case is the Snedeker House, which is a movie, A Haunting in Connecticut. Have you ever seen that one?
I have heard of it, but I am not as well-versed in my horror lore as you are. So
I'm the same. I actually haven't seen it either. I've heard of it. The Snedeker House is a haunting in Connecticut. There's also a book called In a Dark Place, The Story of a True Haunting. This one was really surprising to me. The background behind the Snedeker House is that this is a house in Southington, Connecticut. So they're all like situated in the same place where they're from. The house was at one time a funeral home. The family of 5 rents the house in 1986. To their surprise, they're very surprised about this. They had no idea. They find mortician tools in their basement. And soon enough, the family starts reporting sexual attacks by ghosts, apparitions, visions, and they also claim their son was experiencing violent personality changes. So this is after they come to discover a funeral home in their basement, to which they never saw. It was hidden. One of the famous stories of this is that one day, as Carmen, the mother, mopped the floor, the water turned blood red and smelled of decaying flesh, which to me, I mean, that could be like rust.
Yeah. Did they not know they had a basement, or was it like a secret room in the basement that they didn't know about?
Their story, and I haven't read the book, I don't know the movie, their story is that they had no idea that this was in the basement. I don't know how, why, where, if they never went down, if it was blocked off, but their story was that they had no idea it was used as a funeral home at one time.
Hmm.
So 1986, old Ed and Lorraine Warren are sketching haunted houses outside. I don't actually know how it happened.
They're getting old too. Like, they're in their 60s at this point.
Yeah. They show up and they proclaim that the house, a formal funeral home, was infested with demons. And that's, I don't know, it's probably more to the movies than this, but that's basically what happens. Ray Garrett Garten comes along, who is a horror author hired by the Warrens to write about the house. And just listen, like, I can't, I'm just like, the more you learn about this, I'm just like, what? Oh, he's hired by the Warrens to write about this house. And Ray Garten specifically speaks about receiving conflicting reports, lack of contact with the family, and presenting Ed with a problem about the story. Ed says, okay, this is a quote from Ray Garten. Oh, they're crazy. You've got some of the story. Just use what works and make the rest up. Just make it up and make it scary, Ed says to this guy. Ray also speaks out about the family's involvement, which was going through serious problems like addiction with drugs and alcohol, and people involved telling different stories. So there's that. There is a specific report saying there's no way the family didn't know that there wasn't a funeral home in that house. One of the children was battling, I believe it was some sort of cancer. This is a family that had a lot of problems, didn't have a lot of money. It's also claimed by Carmen Snedeker that she had never been informed that the house was once a funeral home, like I said, and is widely disputed, as the former owner and neighbor said that she was fully aware that this house was a funeral home.
Also, why are demons attracted to funeral homes?
Maybe it's something that the Catholic Church likes to say, but again, this is something that you see with Ed and Lorraine Warren. Literally everything is a demon. There's no ghosts or anything like that. Literally everything is a demon. So okay. I don't know, because it's Ed and Lorraine Warren, I guess.
I don't understand why a demon would go to, like, there's not a lot of bodies to possess.
No,
as far as I know, they don't eat bodies.
Might be the same as like people thinking that graveyards are really haunted because there's bodies there, maybe, but there's no bodies in a funeral home. Maybe it's just the amount of dead bodies that
they're only there for a really short period of time. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just a funny thing that people have with things like that, I guess.
When it involves dead bodies, generally people think that that's where the ghost is going to be. But that just, first off, that's ghosts we're talking about. That's a different thing than what Ed and Lorraine Warren say everything is. So they're just on a different path.
Your guess is as good as mine, because we don't know the actual science of where the demons go.
demons love formaldehyde. That's probably what it is.
That is probably what it, but it's no longer a funeral home, so there might not be any more
formaldehyde. No, but maybe there was some residues of formaldehyde on the ground, or they think that formaldehyde is like a natural occurring substance
that
comes back over time, and they had used too much. And also, there's formaldehyde in graveyards. So
there we go. Oh, yeah, because of the bodies. Okay, we got our...
There we go.
Okay.
Demons love formaldehyde. Cracked it.
Okay, so it's also been alluded to, to keep it as neutral as I can, that the Warrens took advantage of a family going through a really hard time with substance abuse and sexual abuse going on as well. As you see in most of their cases, when they get involved with those close to losing houses or down on their luck, you see it reoccurring in their cases. It does get pretty dark in the fact that they were claiming sexual attacks from these ghosts when there's speculation that it is actually just abuse within the family. So it's actually a pretty dark case when you get down to it.
Yeah, and especially if you're a kid and this is happening to you, either you're going to brush it off as something that's not, like, it couldn't be a family member, or you're specifically told not to tell anybody and there's marks and people are asking questions.
Yeah, especially when you look at them going through when the children had a form of cancer. They obviously moved into a house that was a funeral home. And then they said they had no knowledge. So maybe it was just cheaper rent or something that they could live there. Just all signs point to being taken advantage of. And they profited out of it, both the Warrens and the Snedeker family. And they do have a franchise in that in itself as well, a book and a movie. So next one is the famous Amityville Horror. This is the one that I heard that there's a lot of controversy about the Warrens. So probably one of the most infamous of the Warren cases. This one's been around forever. I remember watching this one when I was a kid. So this one is based on the paranormal experiences, kind of the Lutz family. It was majorly capitalized on and probably one of the first horror movies that I can recall other than Ernest Scared Stupid, which I actually talk about quite a bit. Or the Brave Little Toaster.
Also, I think Ernest Scared Stupid came out a little later than Amityville.
Yeah. But they're one and the same.
Yeah.
So the original book was published in September 1977 and many movies to come after, starting in 1979 and even made its way into the second Conjuring movie. And it is in itself a multi-million dollar franchise. There is even one with, was it Ryan Reynolds? I think they remade it.
I think it is, actually.
Probably a little while ago, but they remade it. And I think it's Ryan Reynolds that's in it.
It was in the 2010s for sure, though. I think they did that.
Yeah, it was. It's newer. I remember watching it, but it was a while ago now. This one, if you need a refresher on the Amityville, because I'm assuming everyone's seen it.
Sorry, 2005 was the Ryan Reynolds remake.
Okay, so that was around the one. What one were we just talking about? 2006. That's when Ed died. Amityville, the house, set at 112 Ocean Avenue in Amityville, New York. And the story starts with Ronald DeFeo Jr. And he kills both of his parents and his four siblings while they were asleep. And DeFeo is eventually, just to skim over this, DeFeo eventually is sentenced to 25 years to life and he dies in custody. So then the Lutz family moves into the house where this all occurs and they flee the house after 29 days claiming paranormal phenomena drove them out. So that part I just said is all true, every word. The Lutz family claims of sightings of demons, objects moving on their own, slime pouring out of the walls, fly infestations in the middle of winter, demonic voices, and being attacked by unseen forces. All of that is widely disputed. That just, doesn't it just sound like somebody that's just like, if I were a demon and I wanted to say a demon was here, this is what I think it would do. Do those things actually happen? Slime pouring out of walls?
I have seen bee infestations in walls. And if you have a bee infestation, you can actually have honey leaking out of the walls, which is a very close consistency to slime.
Oh, it sounds delicious, but I wouldn't want a bee infestation.
Not quite
you
as scary
that,
as
do you?
It sounds. No.
Okay, good. Because you've seen it, so I'm not sure where you've been.
I have been on Reddit.
So there are many controversies in the Amityville Horror, including, so in the movie, there's a priest that's involved in the whole thing. Cannot tell you exactly where the priest was involved now. I cannot remember. But actual priest that was involved in this, if you would like to call it involved, was only by a phone call and that was it. So he was never actually called there or anything like that. And why would they need a priest? Because Ed Warren is a self-proclaimed professional demonologist and he was involved. So the Lutzes report damages to their locks, doors, and windows, and the owner who moved in right after them claim all were in original state, unharmed and in perfect condition.
Did they contact the Warrens before that 29 days and they moved out or after?
After. The Warrens weren't actually consulted at all by the family.
Okay.
While they were there or after. They go in and they do a brief investigation. We'll figure. I don't know.
And it's at that point they call the priest. Okay.
No. The Lutzes briefly gave a phone call to a priest while they were there in that 29 days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Warrens didn't call a priest or anything like that because Ed Warren's a demonologist. Why would he need a priest?
Fair.
Is his own priest?
I don't know. He's got a supply of holy water somewhere that they can just spray on dolls willy-nilly.
There is actually no reference at all in everything that I've read to them consulting with anyone in the church that you say that.
Huh.
The church does say, yes, he's a demonologist, and we support like him that. Doing that, I guess. Yeah. This is fine.
Keep on doing what you do.
Thumbs up and a wink. Granted, everything that we've been seeing going on with the Catholic Church for thousands of years doesn't surprise
they'll condone a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, we will just leave that at that for now.
Saying that Ed Warren is, yes, certified by the Catholic religion, I mean, that's the least of their worries, I guess.
Yeah.
They've done worse.
We can deal with that one when we get to it.
Yeah, that's fine. Sure, whatever. Records also show that the Lutz family did not ever call the police once during their stay in the home, which apparently they did. I didn't have time to read the book or watch the movie before I'm talking about this, so I'm assuming that one of those says they called the police. House being built on a site where local Shinnecock Indians mentally ill and dying was rejected by local First Nation leaders. Did not happen. Owners since the Lutz family have also reported nothing out of the ordinary. One of the sons does speak about this, Christopher Quarantino, which I like his last name. I feel like that's what we've all been doing the last year. Quarantino. He claims that the little activity that did happen was linked to George Lutz and his occult rituals. And he does say that most was greatly exaggerated and that George was a showman and took advantage, and basically nothing in the books and the movies is true. With that being said, Christopher does recount seeing a shadowy figure in the shape of a man move towards him only to dissipate. However, he does contribute this to his stepfather being involved in the occult. So those are some notable cases. Most of them have all been capitalized on now. This is just a brief summary of a few of them, kind of what they're about, what has come of them. Most of them multi-million dollar franchises. I would like to give a notable mention to the Enfield haunting, which I think does come up in one of the Conjuring movies. I don't know that I've seen it come up in one of the Conjuring movies. This is in the Warren universe of the Conjuring movies, to which they're all associated with. However, I actually found this quite funny because the only reason that they're tied to this case is because they showed up, they heard about this haunting, and it was covered quite a bit by the media. It's a poltergeist case in the United Kingdom with a bunch of adolescent girls, which did actually fit the bill for the Warrens to take advantage of because it was a single mom and they were well off by any means. So anyhow, Ed and Lorraine hear about this and they show up uninvited and they were refused admittance to the home. They had nothing to do with it other than just showing up there and being told to get out of here. Yet their name is tied to it somehow and it shows up in their Conjuring movies and they're still making money off of it. I'd also like to mention, as I went through with them and I made mention going through them, that the Lutz family, the Snedeker family, and the Warrens made a lot of money from the franchises that came from their stories, like a lot of money. And they're making even more now with not only the books, which came out a long time ago, but now they're making the Conjuring movies. Yeah, so those are my stories, and I'll let you be the judge on Ed and Lorraine Warren. However, if I may give my two cents on this one, which I try to remain impartial, but this is our podcast, and I feel like I can put my
you can two never, cents on yeah, it if I you want. You can never keep your views out of it. You can just try to give the info as unbiased as possible.
I tried to on those ones, and that's what it is. But now it's my part. So they definitely seem to take advantage and they strong arm their ways into situations. They research rather than using any sort of purported psychic abilities, generalizing everything to be demonic. Hmm?
You did bring up Lorraine is a psychic, yet like a lot of the stories have nothing to do with psychic abilities.
No, and like in my research, and I could be wrong because I researched their most well-known cases. More than anything that came up, literally no psychic abilities were ever mentioned. It was all Lorraine researched.
Well, the only thing I can researcher. Think of is the seance that happened in the...
Wasn't her.
Oh, okay.
She wasn't the one doing the seance. They brought in a psychic.
Really?
Yeah. So other than that, there is no mention of her psychic abilities. It was her research. That's where Bathsheba came from with the parents. That's where basically anything came from. And I don't know if I mentioned it. So when Ed would do the paintings of the houses, Lorraine would research all about the houses, everything going on there. So then they would take the painting and Ed and Lorraine would go to get entry into these houses and she would know all about this house and the history of the house. They also generalized everything to be demonic. It was literally never anything else other than demonic, whether it fits or not. And it was really Ed more than anything. I don't know about Lorraine. She just seems to do research, but Ed really just seemed to make things up to capitalize on things. And that's what I got from all of that.
You said that they had over 10,000 hauntings they investigated. How long was their career?
So that would have gone from
like 1951, let's say, to about...
What would you consider the start of their career? Like when he started drawing the haunted houses?
I don't know. I'm just trying to... How many days they would spend on average towards a case?
I don't know about that specifically. Okay, so they found the New England Society for Psychic Research in 1952.
Okay, so let's just kind of put that...
Would be a good starting point, right?
What would be
and
the
they
end?
Went, they did it until they died.
Okay, so like 2010?
She passed away 2019. He passed away 2006.
Okay. Well, let's say as a couple, let's just cap that at 60 years. That puts them at about 160 cases per year. And let's say that they're probably dropping off in their 70s and 80s. So let's say that all 10,000 happened in 50 years, just for ease of this thing.
You know what? I would even probably put it at less, because once they started getting out there and they started doing TV shows and stuff like that,
So that means they were doing 200 cases a year. And
that's like,
and especially if you're traveling for some of them. Yeah, that's, you have 365 days in a year. You got around two days to spend on an investigation. Maybe if there's like a row of houses that are all haunted, you can hit off a couple in a couple days, but that's generally not how hauntings work as far as I'm concerned.
Maybe and it is as far as they're concerned.
Yeah. And then there's also
who knows what they're actually counting towards it. Because, I mean, I don't know if they officially called the Enfield haunting something they investigated, but they had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. But they flew out there and that's going to be at least 2 days.
I can't say that if that was me and I took the time to fly out there and I got rejected, I'd probably count it too.
Well, you have to. It's a business expense.
Exactly.
Maybe they were just taking a vacation and they looked up any cases that were going on nearby.
True, so they could deduct it.
Okay.
Just really smart businessmen.
Chelsea, do you have any last words?
I'd heard a lot of controversy about them. I didn't know that it was to this extent. I was happy to hear it. I mean, they do make for good scary movies, but it bothers me that they've capitalized so much, not only out of things that they just blatantly made up, but
I do have one last thing I would like to share.
Okay.
Just before we get out of here.
Okay.
Eventually, they took the do not touch sign off of Annabelle, but they left the warning positively do not sign on.
What?
Yeah, it said danger, don't touch anything at the very top. Instead, they took that off because I guess it was covering up a cross, and that's probably blasphemous. So there's just a cross at the top of this communal library and a sign at the bottom that says just says warning, positively do not.
I mean, that's very open for interpretation. Very open.
Yeah, much like the Warrens.
I guess it is symbolizing
the amount of effort they could possibly put into any one thing.
Yeah.
They probably had to run off for their next investigation. Well, that was very eye-opening, Chelsea. Thank you for that. I did not foresee this amount of just like brazen actions on the behalf of one party.
Why are they so popular? Why are they? They're brought in on so many TV shows like I watched as the experts. And I don't find there to be anything that's so expert about them. I mean, they did open, though, the society.
And the society didn't really get brought up much after that either.
No, by me, though.
Yeah, that's fair.
It is still a thing.
Yeah, but thank you to everybody who's been watching. And if you have a haunted house that you would like us to paint and research and open an expense account for Journey to the Fringe so that we may travel there tax deductible.
You could do many things. You could write a horror novel for you. We could paint your house. That might be it.
That might be it. Oh, one last question. Did he ever mention which demons, or was it just, yeah, demons?
I think it was just demons, except for that one that was Bathsheba. That was just a poor.
But Bathsheba wasn't even a demon.
Oh, she wasn't. And that brings up a good point. She was actually a person, not a demon.
Yeah.
And she, at worst, was just a person that did a really bad thing, not a demon. At best, she was a person that got convicted of something that she didn't do.
Yeah.
So then not a demon either.
Okay. Well, we'll leave you on that note. We have not picked the next topic for our next episode. We'll be talking about that in the coming days. In the meantime, if you have a haunted house for us to do an artistic interpretation in some kind about,
whether it be
through dance or symbolism, we will figure it out. Please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com and we'll figure it out from there. In the meantime, we have been your beloved hosts of Journey to the Fringe, and we'll see you next time.
It's always a pleasure. And waving goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. We are a new podcast, and we would very much so appreciate if you could like, subscribe, share, and if possible, provide a 5-star review or some sort of feedback if you feel like there's anything we could be doing better. But 5-star review is the best thing you can do for us, as it does help, unfortunately, in the world of algorithms.
Yes, please and thank you. And you can follow us on social media at Journey to the Fringe. We don't have all of them, so try searching it. Instagram, we're on Facebook. Right now, we have a subreddit. And if there's anything you want to hear in the future, feedback, anything, you can email us at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. If there's something we're missing that you'd like to see us on, please let us know. We only know what we know, so we're only in so many places.
Also, if you feel that we have gotten anything wrong, please let us know there as well, as we would really like to have the best information possible. We are only as good as our research, and if you can provide anything further, it's a real help.
Or if you want to share anything, we will definitely, we're open to shares.
So yes, thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As a season shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.